You may have practices that you use in these kinds of moments. And I'd like you to settle into that form of meditation or prayer that you choose. But then, once you settle into that meditation, I invite you to expand the boundaries of your consciousness to the others here near you, the others who will be beside you in meditation, those in this building, and perhaps even expand your consciousness to those beyond. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that I came from Bennington this morning, and making the trip was no chore. Things are starting to color up. The mists were hanging over every body of water on the way. It was a beautiful morning, beautiful trip. So, this morning I'm going to reflect on two questions. And to start off, I'd like to read you a short poem. In fact, the author, Muhammad Ali, when he was Cassius Clay, the poet, claimed it to be the world's shortest poem. The poem is this: Me, we. How do you answer the question, who am I? Do you answer it in terms of what you have become, what you have achieved, or where you are in your life journey? Or perhaps you define yourself in relation to others, the various identities in your background or in your present, the influences and the interests that you have that define you. We live in the most individualistic culture in the world right now, and that can put immense pressure on us individually to be somebody, to be important, to be unique, or to be significant. We also live in an age of pervasive media, and most of us have defined ourselves, consciously or unconsciously, by our social media presence. Do any of you here remember Who's Who books? When you were in high school, you did research. Who's Who in the United States? Who's Who in medicine? What a quaint idea that books could define all the noteworthy people in our country or in the world. Now, most of us are defined somewhere in digital media, in a social media site, and we get to define ourselves. We get to make our own Who's Who entry. Now, many more people, and I think of it as similar to the Who's Who books, because many more people will see that social media image of us than we'll ever meet face to face. They will know us by the comments we leave in discussion groups and by the websites that we may use for our own interests and purposes. There they see streams of words, maybe digital photographs, but they don't see fathers of daughters or aunts of nephews or neighbors. You Google yourself, as most of us have done, and you find from the results, but then ask yourself, who am I to the stranger who is introduced to me in this way? It takes a long time to establish the identity by which we're known in a place like this congregation. The blog or the website is a shallow substitute for the personalities that we know here, for better or worse. Our experiences of the people in this congregation can be rich and nuanced, but the abstracted digital presences, the ones by which we meet so many new people, they lose a great deal of that richness and the immediacy of our identities. And these simplistic identities that we put forth leave us not only wanting to know more about others, but to tell more about ourselves. When we make comparisons between our self-identity and those flat, sterile, manipulated identities of others that we see online, it can make us feel dissatisfied with our own identity. Now, one of the most useful models I've found for our relationship with others, I found many years ago, actually, I think when I was in college, it's called the Johari window. Have any of you ever heard of the Johari window? Okay. Maybe you remember it, maybe you don't, or maybe you've encountered it recently. The Johari window is a technique for modeling our relationship with others, and it's always depicted as a window with four panes. In the upper left-hand corner are the things that I know about myself that others know about me. And in the lower right-hand corner is the things I don't know about myself and that others don't know about me. Now, the other two quadrants are the interesting ones. They are the ones, the things I know about myself that others don't know. And finally, the things that others know about me that I don't know. The purpose of the model is not what's in the panes so much as the boundaries in between the panes. We have a great deal of freedom in determining how those boundaries are drawn, the way we move to decide that we want people to know more about us and that we want to know more about others, or that we want them to know less, and that there are certain things we choose not to reveal. The way we decide to move those boundaries by revealing more about ourselves or seeking more information about ourselves, by revealing more to others and seeking more information about ourselves from others, largely determines how satisfied we are with our own identity. Finding the right boundaries can improve the way we feel about ourselves, and we can also manage these boundaries to the benefit of our community, those around us, to make the group around us more sustainable and more rich by our presence. They also affect the strength of the community in other ways. If I am empowered to lead a group, do I know about the values and concerns of the people I'm supposed to lead? Or if I'm being represented by someone else, do I feel confident that those representing me know my values and concerns? Setting the boundaries we set in the Johari window, reflects the boundaries of ourselves. Now, this is an interesting question. What is the boundary of myself? what is I? Do I feel that I am, the being that I am, is bounded by my skin? Or is there some connection to others, or to the environment, or to the universe, that is also part of I? Okay, that about takes care of my first question. I think we've left you with more questions, but let's move on to who are we? By the way, one thing I was going to drop it here, the name Johari Window, if you're ever curious about that, if you read more about it, it's actually named for the two guys who invented it, who were named Joe and Harry. So who are we? There are lots of ways that we can define we. What do you mean when you use the term we? Of course, it depends on context. There's the old joke about the Lone Ranger faced with an overpowering force of hostile Comanches turning to Tonto and saying, "Tonto, it looks like we're in real trouble this time." To which Tonto replies, "What do you mean, we?" But think about the question of we and be as abstract as you can. Does the we extend beyond your partner, beyond your family, beyond your community or political group? When I say we, do I mean those who look like me? Those who have the same definition of marriage and family as I do? Those who have the same understanding of gender and gender roles that I do? Does my version of we expand to all those citizens of our country? Or beyond that, to all those who live in this country? To the entire Western industrialized world, or to all of humanity, to all living beings, or even all of nature? Is that possible to include that as we? Or can we only include those with whom we have some shared purpose, some shared experience? Can we be defined by those we exclude, or only by those we include? Is it right for we to include those with whom we have no common experience, those with whom we've never shared at least some part of our resources or our sacrifices or our limitations or our privileges? Now, in thinking about this sermon, I think there is a global we with whom we all share one thing, and that is the ultimate risks: nuclear annihilation, ecological disaster, societal collapse. Because we share these risks, I begin to visualize all creation as within the boundary of we. Personally, I think it's to my advantage, and to everyone's advantage, really, to expand the definition of we as far as possible. And our UU principles seem to support that goal, not only speaking of the inherent worth and dignity of all human beings, but also speaking in terms of justice, equity, compassion, democratic principles, recognizing the interconnected web of all human beings. Interconnected web of all beyond human beings. All of our principles really advise us to expand our concept of we. As it states on the UU Association webpage, we gather to know and to be known, to comfort and to be comforted, to celebrate the mystery that binds us, each to all. Now, Jews, we usually don't do sin. S-I-N. I'd like to suggest that there is at least one sin, perhaps original sin, in the sense that we have all committed it. It is a sin that is not defined in our principles or in our bylaws, but a sin that emerges as the opposite or the antithesis of our principles. And I would state it this way. It is a sin to want or take or expect more for yourself than you expect for others. Avoiding that sin can be a challenge in our society. It implies a fantastic level of equity, especially in the most individualistic society in the world. Treating people with equity is critical to expanding our concept of we. We have to, and we have only one primary tool within our species that helps us with expanding that concept of we. It's embedded in the structure of our brains. It's embedded in our social structure, and that is our ability to speak, to have speech and communication. Speech and communication facilitated by the unique structures of our brain are humanity's tools for accommodating the wide range of our individual behaviors and gifts and molding them into a society that works. Now, some of you may question, especially in this time, whether speech and communication are up to the job of making human society work. But I would suggest that it isn't the limit of our special traits for communications that constrain us in making a society that works. What constrains us are our insecurities and our fears, and maybe our distaste for being considered in common. How well does your personal definition of we work? The definition of we fails when it only extends to those who look or live or sound or worship like me. Our UU principles encourage us to develop our spiritual identity, treating others with dignity and respect, including as many as possible in our concept of we, is part of developing our spiritual identity. Sometimes, showing respect means offering criticism without anger or fear. Sometimes it means acknowledging a hurt you have felt or caused. Our interactions with others are an essential resource for our spiritual growth. And our interactions help us answer the question, who am I? I believe that the path to spiritual growth includes progressively reducing our concern with I and expanding the concept of we. In the final analysis, in the final extension of this, is to come to believe that there is no them. There's only us. Perhaps the best way to measure our spiritual growth is the fulfillment and the enlightenment that we receive from our relationships with others. Me, we, is a poem. So take a moment for your reflection, and then we'll have some follow-up discussion.